Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today in the show, we're going to talk a little about diseases in different crops, especially root rot in pulse crops. But even if you don't have pulse crops on your farm, or even though you might not be concerned about specifically root rot, we're going to talk in general about how do you reduce disease issues that you might see in or around roots, and what can you do regardless of the crop you raise, the soil you have, your conditions, that kind of thing. So we'll get into that all throughout the show today. As always, we'd be happy to take your phone call and talk about anything that's happening on your farm or answer any of your questions. We'll also get to the Ag PhD mailbag a little bit later in the show as well. So if you'd like to call us here, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. So as soon as we start talking about diseases in different crops, right away, you might think about fungicide. And I agree that is something to talk about, and we will talk about that. But I also want you to focus a lot on cultural practices and just other things you can do rather than spending money on pesticides all the time. And don't get me wrong. I mean, they're a step. They're a tool, and we need those in a lot of cases. And yeah, I'm probably always going to put seed treatment on my seed and so on. But think about, when is your crop most resistant to diseases? Okay, that's ultimately what we want to do. It's just like, and I relate this all the time. Think about human health for a second. Okay, so we got this whole coronavirus, this COVID thing that's going on, and a lot of people are scared to death of it. Okay, well, age seems to be a big factor. You can't change your age, all right? Just like in your soil, I mean, there's some things you can't change. But what can you do, like with human health, if you want to be more tolerant to any disease that's out there? Well, you eat right, you exercise in moderation, you make sure that you have a balanced diet, you're taking your vitamins, you get yourself into good shape, you are at an appropriate weight. I'm trying to phrase that as gently as I can. So you see where I'm going with this. You know, in human health, there are many steps you can take that have nothing to do with drugs. It's just like in your soil. Before we get to the fungicide piece, let's talk about drainage. Let's talk about fertility, compaction, what you do for tillage, your soil's organic matter, the soil's pH. There are a lot of things there. And you know what? If I just flat out do everything I can to raise a healthier crop, the odds are my crop is going to be more tolerant to all diseases. The other big thing is rotation. It's rotating to crops that aren't going to get those same diseases. That's why very often, like we farm in the Midwestern United States, the rotation of corn and soybeans. Why is that so popular? It's because corn is a grass crop, soybeans are a broadleaf crop. So you're rotating a grass crop with a broadleaf crop all the time. And that's really nice because a lot of times the diseases in grass crops are different than the diseases in the broadleaf crops. Just like Darren and I were just having this discussion this morning about sclerotinia white mold. It's terrible in our entire region here. So what do to try to get away from that? You plant corn. Because sclerotinia white mold affects the broadleaf crops, and it doesn't affect corn. Likewise, Goss's wilt is really a terrible disease that we have in corn, yet it doesn't impact soybeans. So if I just go away from corn for a little bit, now when I do go back, then I don't have as much issue with that disease. So crop rotation, yeah, that's great. I want to come back to the first thing that I said too, drainage. Drainage is always number one for us. And if you look at where a lot of the pulse crops are raised, they're raised where, let's just say, we don't have 60 inches of rain a year like they might in the southeast United States. So you're dealing with a little drier climate. And when it's a little drier climate, it's very common to think, oh, I don't need any drain tile. And maybe you don't. But what I am saying here is you got to at least take a look at it. We feel like we farm in a very dry area. We only normally get 20 to 22 inches of total annual precipitation. And, you know, we've gone almost 2 months now with very little rain here on our farm. Do we still need tile? You bet we do. Do we need it on every acre? No way. We need it in certain areas. You fix those certain areas, and let's face it, there are just pockets where you have bad disease problems, right? Okay, look at those pockets. Look at what's going wrong. Do more soil testing there. But first, I'd be fixing the drainage. Get that done, and then that's really going to help you with everything else. Then that sets you up for leaching out some of the harmful things that could cause problems in your soil. Just for example, I think about excess salt, sodium, and even to some degree magnesium. When you have all those in extreme excesses, well, now your crop is not going to be able to fight off root rot and pulse crops, or I mean just about any disease and just about any crop. But if I have good drainage out there, then I can flush those things through the soil. Okay, now you might say, well, wait a second, sodium and magnesium can't flush through very well. Well, they can if you turn them into salts, and how you turn them into salts is combine them with sulfur. So you get some sulfur out there, so magnesium sulfate is Epsom salt. Okay, sodium sulfate, that's also a salt. All right, so we convert things over to salts, and then we can flush them out of our soil with good drainage. And good drainage is not just tile. Calcium is a really big factor here too. We want to make sure that the calcium levels are high, 65, 75%, something like that in a base saturation test. If your calcium level is not at least that high, then odds are you're going to have a soil that's going to compact more easily. That's going to create a lot of problems out there. It won't allow you to flush these things out of the soil, and you definitely will have more disease issues. Also, we think about building organic matter. If you can build up your organic matter over time, that also makes drainage a little bit better. You have a little more air in the soil. You do typically have a few less disease issues as well. And certainly, with some of these seed treatments, they're amazing. Like when I think root rot and pulse crops in terms of seed treatments, the first one I'm thinking about is Intego. That's ethoboxam. That will really give you a lot of assistance on that. So we've talked about a number of things already today. We'll get into more of that on our show and answer your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag, all here on Ag PhD Radio.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the Endzone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Hot spots and moisture in your bin can cost you thousands in lost revenue. The Endzone monitors outside conditions to run your fans exactly when you want them to, naturally bringing your grain to ideal temperature and humidity. Master bin management with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Asgrow brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Asgrow leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Talking about root rot and pulse crops on today's program. Also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can email us radio@agphd.com. Happy to have Nathan Popiel on with us right now. He's with Syngenta down in Nebraska. Nathan, how you doing?
Good. I'm actually up in North Dakota.
Oh, I'm sorry. I saw the N, and apparently that threw off our call screener there, and she put Nebraska instead of North Dakota. Sorry about that, Nathan. You know, you might want to be down in Nebraska. They're getting ready to start harvest down there. You got a little ways to go in North Dakota yet?
Wheat's been going pretty heavy so far. So, all good. We can go ahead and get into talking pulse crops too.
You know, Brian was talking about this earlier, and he said crop rotation is going to be such a big deal in this whole thing and cultural practices. And I agree. I think that's important, but certainly we're going to need some help on some of these tough diseases.
Absolutely. Rotation is the first step that we can take when it comes to any disease, you know, root rots especially. Root rots tend to attack in all different environments. We don't always have the same luxuries we do with leaf diseases, where sometimes we get the right environment where we don't have to worry about that. So rotation becomes a big factor, primarily because we get a little bit more of the selection pressure taken care of that way. There are certain root rots that like pulse crops better than cereal crops or corn crops, for example, and vice versa. So as you rotate those different crops, you can definitely keep that selection down to the best we can. And then additionally, I think in every crop, it's always important to seed treat. I don't think there's any question to benefits to seed treatment. With what we do with our pulse crop mix, our Cruiser Max Vibrance Pulse, we try to throw as many active ingredients at the different diseases as we can to get as much activity to protect from any disease. Because again, at planting, we don't know what our environment's going to be like. We don't know what diseases might be most prevalent given the environment. And so we kind of need to prepare for all of them.
All right, let's start by talking about some of these diseases. Which are the ones of most concern in your geography?
So we'll see from time to time, we'll see Asclepias as a seedborne, as well as the soil-borne form. That tends to be the biggest one that people are concerned about. There are some species of Fusarium that are showing up more and more in peas, especially, that are becoming more prevalent. The Fusarium avomaceum, for one, is becoming more prevalent. And so that's becoming a concern. And then anytime we get real wet season, wet conditions at planting, I think the Pythium can be a big concern as well. But I think the biggest concern for guys at this point in time, and probably what we're seeing most prevalently, are these new strains of Fusarium that, again, I think are more of a selection pressure where they like pulse crops better, and so we're seeing them more often in our pulse crops as that rotation has gotten tighter.
Now, you mentioned the seed treat, and yeah, if we would have talked to you a few years ago, Nathan, it would have been a lot shorter name, but now it's Cruiser Max with Vibrant specifically for pulses, and I love that you have so many different modes of action in there. Talk about that Vibrance piece. What does that change for farmers who are using it?
So Vibrance is all about root health and really getting, you know, root vigor. So we see a lot of above ground vigor from Cruiser. The Vibrance really helps us with root vigor and then just unmatched protection against Rhizoctonia fungi in the soil. And so Rhizoct tends to be a disease. You can see it heavy enough. I've done it in plots where it's been heavy enough that it takes out entire plant stands. Typically, we don't see it that heavy. Typically, we don't see it that bad. Usually, it's something that just reduces our yield, reduces the efficiency of the plant, you know, nips away at the roots a little bit, so we aren't quite as drought tolerant as maybe we'd like to be. And so it tends to not be something where we see dead plants and go, oh, we have a big problem. But Rhizoct can be a big yield robber for us as well.
I know when we talk to farmers in North Dakota, one of the challenges that they have in some areas is there's some drainage issues. And sometimes in heavier soils especially, they end up staying wet a little bit longer. You mentioned Pythium being a challenge there. I would imagine you've definitely seen your share of Pythium here the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, I think Pythium tends to be the one where we attribute it to a drown out. We'll attribute it to a bad area of the field. We'll attribute it to a bad soil condition that just doesn't drain as well. And where I see a lot of times is, you know, we'll go through those areas and then that seed treatment giving us protection against Pythium, you'll see plants grow through that. And so you go, okay, well, maybe it's not just the soil type. It is actually a disease that's going on here. And it is a disease that likes that type of soil and that type of situation. But it's not necessarily just on that soil either. So it's a prevalent thing that we can see. But again, I think it's one of those, we'll see it in areas of the field. And sometimes we might even just attribute that to, that's a bad spot in the field.
Sure, sure, absolutely. What about bugs? Is that a big concern for you in North Dakota? I know we had a lot of calls this spring about wireworms, also seed corn maggots, I think were another one that we heard quite a few guys talking about. Do you see a lot of that in pulse crops?
You will see wireworms in pulse crops. They aren't real prevalent. I always say, okay, so with wireworms, I think cereals are more like ice cream. And pulse crops, soybeans, are probably a little more like broccoli. They'll still eat it. They just don't like it near as much. And so if you've got it out there, that definitely could be a big problem. They definitely still feed away on your pulse crops. We tend to see more issues in cereals. The bigger concern that we see from an insect standpoint a lot of times in the pulse crops especially is both the aphids, as well as some of our other above-ground insects that we tend to have a lot of concerns about. Seed corn maggot as well would definitely attack a pulse crop if it was there. I didn't have a lot of reports of that this year in my area, but that's definitely something that could be an issue as well.
Now, you mentioned the above-ground insects, and it certainly was a pretty good year for some of those bugs in different areas. I know that's going to be a big concern as well. When you think about the root rot in pulse crops, once you have a problem like Ascochyta, you're going to be dealing with it again down the road. What's your advice for growers who say, man, I've got a few fields that have been a struggle. Is it just rotate away for several years to try to help yourself out, or what would you suggest?
You know, it's probably going to be a little bit of everything. It's going to be rotate away. When you rotate away, make sure you still plant a crop that has a seed treatment on it. Again, a lot of these diseases are going to attack the other plants, you know, cereals as well. You know, Rizoc is going to go after pulses, and it's going to go after cereals, and it's going to go after corn, it's going to go after soybeans. But if we make sure we seed treat those, we're going to help to reduce that amount that's out there. So seed treat when we rotate away as well as rotate. And then when we come back to that pulse crop in that field, you don't want to make sure that we seed treat again. And using something that has that full load, you know, four active ingredients for fungicides plus the insecticide that we get from a Cruiser Max Vibrance Pulse tends to be a really good option because we have so many different tools that we're going after that with.
Great stuff there. We're talking with Nathan Popiel with Syngenta up in North Dakota. Nathan, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck here this harvest season.
Yep, sounds good. You too.
We're talking about root rot in pulse crops, and certainly a lot of the advice Nathan was giving there too could help not just in pulse crops, but in the other crops in your rotation as well. I really do believe, just like Nathan does, that seed treatment makes such a difference. And the one challenge I would say, Brian, is that growers say, well, one year I saw a huge yield difference with my seed treatment. The next one I didn't see as big a difference.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's just nobody can predict the weather, and nobody can predict when we're going to have the right conditions, and I mean everything all coming together, so disease just ends up that much worse. We just don't know from year to year. And so I look at seed treatments and, you know, some of the other investments we make, even like tile. It's to some degree insurance. Yep, some years it's not super necessary, but then you get other years where it's disastrous if you haven't done those things. So we just, as farmers, have to look at, okay, what's the average? And on average, is this going to pay for me? Because there is going to be tremendous variability, and I think most farmers realize that. We'll continue talking about disease issues, especially root rot in pulse crops, right after this.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more.
Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from SipCam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift Nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the Endzone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. The Endzone monitors outside conditions to run your fans so your grain naturally reaches ideal temperature and humidity. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about root rots in pulse crops on today's show, and Dell called in and said, "All right, guys, what's a pulse crop?" And I thought that was a pretty interesting question. And you know what? Sometimes we maybe assume that everybody knows what's going on, and in the northern part of the United States and other areas around the country. And also, as we get up into Canada, that's a prime area for pulse crops. We've got Sherry Lynn Phelps with us right now with the Saskatchewan Pulse Growers. Sherry Lynn, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. First of all, we got to answer Dell's question. What is a pulse crop?
Oh, that's always a good question. So pulse crop is a legume crop that the seed is consumed whole. So it's more or less like a legume that fixes nitrogen when it's growing, and then the seed from that crop is eaten as a food. So those are what are considered pulse crops.
Okay, well, if we've got a crop that we're going to eat as a food, the last thing we want to see is that we've got some sort of disease impacting that plant during the growing season, and root rots have been a real concern for pulse crop growers. Can you talk to us a little bit about it? I know there's a lot of research that's being done up in Saskatchewan, and certainly a lot of acres being grown as well.
Yes, so when we're talking about pulse crops, I should mention that we're talking peas, lentils, chickpeas, dry beans, fava beans. Those are kind of the crops that we grow in Saskatchewan. And when we're talking about root rot issues, we're talking mainly about the problems that we've been having with peas and lentils. There was a new pathogen that was identified in 2012, so relatively new, only about 8 years ago, and it's called aphanomyces. And that's the one that's really the problem pathogen, and it just devastates pulse crops, specifically peas and lentils. So being peas and lentils are our main acres of pulse crops in Saskatchewan that can be devastating for growers because we lose yield. Not so much on the quality end for food consumption in terms of what the seed looks like. It's just that the plants do shut down early and the yield is limited.
You know, it can be a big challenge. And one of the things that we see, too, crops like peas and lentils, they don't have quite the funding that some of the larger acre crops like wheat or corn would have, for example. And finding solutions is not easy sometimes to these disease problems. I know there's a lot of work being done up in Saskatchewan. Talk to us a little more about that.
You know, you bring up a good point because they are, like, to us, of course, as a pulse organization, they're big crops. But in Saskatchewan and even, you know, if you go wider nationally and internationally, pulse crops are small acre crops. They don't compete against the canolas, the wheats worldwide. So when companies are looking at investing in new product development and looking for solutions to pests, they tend to invest more money in those crops where there's more acres and they can sell more product. But we're very fortunate here in Western Canada. We have a number of companies that have recognized the value of having products that are effective in pulses. So we've been very fortunate that way and have pesticides and other types of products that have been developed to help us control a lot of disease and insects and so forth. However, with the root rot side of things, we do have limited products, and that is actually something that's a worldwide problem. And the problem is that this pathogen, the Aethonomyces I mentioned earlier, is just so darn hard to control, and there is not much for chemistries that are effective against it for the long term. So it's a real problem, and there is a lot of research going on looking at developing resistance in varieties to try and combat the disease that way. There are companies that are looking at their existing lines of products as well as some new potentials for the effectiveness on Aethonomyces. And so far, we only have two products that have suppression on their label for it. So it only gives you a little bit of help, but does not control the disease itself.
I know one other thing that you were looking at was cover crops and seeing if that could help reduce disease by planting different types of crops out there. Has there been anything that's come of that? Have you found other crops that could potentially help defeat this Aethonomyces?
That's a great question. And Dr. Shama Chatterton at Ag Canada in Lethbridge has started a cover crop project. It's still in its infancy, so we don't have a lot of results from it yet, but the project came about because there is some research out there suggesting that the types of crops grown before or after peas or lentils may have some impact on the longevity of the disease in the soil. So things like mustards, oats are ones that in greenhouse or in lab settings, they found that they've impacted the disease somewhat. It has still, like we said, it's just in its infancy when it's going to the field, so it still needs to be tested from a field scale perspective. But it is something that is ongoing, and we look forward to the results of that. Because maybe, you know, by including more of those crops that can impact the spore load in the soil, we can in turn help to mitigate the risks with the root rots.
You know, another thing that growers have talked about is just how certain species of wild lentils, for example, seem to handle Aethonomyces better than some of the commercial varieties that they're planting. Is there an effort? You mentioned the breeding and what's happening there. I know certainly you're using marker-assisted technology to try to move that forward too. Is there work being done on things like wild lentils to try to breed that into our commercial varieties?
Yeah, there is some work being done on the breeding side, and they found some resistance in the wild lentils. So, you know, it's one thing to find it in a variety of lentils that you can easily transmit and bring into the commercial varieties. But when you're dealing with a wild species, you then have to get that gene and find it in the inserted or find it in the natural, more domesticated population. So it is something that they're working on. They're a little ways out, though, until in terms of getting it in some commercial varieties.
I know we were talking with Nathan Popiel with Syngenta down in North Dakota, and he had mentioned that Ascochyta was a big concern there. Is that a concern for you up in Saskatchewan as well? Is that a big challenge?
Ascochyta is one of those diseases that in Saskatchewan, particularly with lentils, a lot of the lentil varieties have been bred to have more resistance to it. So it's a disease that we manage quite regularly and haven't had really bad outbreaks of it in lentils for a number of years. Anthracnose is more of a problem in lentils. When we're talking about peas, it's more the Ascochyta or Microsporella that that growers are managing for when they're doing their fungicide applications. But as long as they're using the regular fungicide applications and rotating the fungicide groups, we haven't had issues too much with that as well.
Sure, Lynn, where are pulse crop acres going in Saskatchewan? Is this something that is increasing in size? Is there a growing demand? Is there a very stable market? How would you classify that?
Well, I would say that our pulse acres right now are fairly stable. We've had, you know, kind of little ups and downs from year to year, the last 5 years sort of thing, as prices fluctuate and as markets change in terms of their accessibility. So as a pulse commodity organization, we'd like to see things keep stable. We don't want to like grow a whole bunch of acres and then that cause the price to drop because we're over flooding the market and reducing the profitability for growers. So it's more about keeping and maintaining the acres that we do have and maximizing the quality and yields that are coming off those existing acres.
Talking with Sherry Lynn Phelps with the Saskatchewan Pulse Growers. If you'd like more information about some of the research that they're doing and some of the different things that that organization is working on, you can find them online, saskpulse.com, saskpulse.com. Sherry Lynn, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the information today, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Talking about root rots in pulse crops on today's program. And of course, we will tackle any agronomic question that you have if you give us a phone call at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. When we come back, we're getting a lot of questions in for the AgPhD mailbag. We'll get to those shortly. You're listening to AgPhD Radio.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
When it comes to competitive herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Weedmaster, Patriot, and Diablo for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Hey Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree!
power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and its burn-down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Hey, everybody. Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, and it is the Ag PhD mailbag time where we tackle your agronomic questions. You can email us radio@agphd.com, just like Lucas did. He said, hey guys, love your show. I'm in Northeast Nebraska, and we're planning on breaking some new ground soon. Some is old alfalfa, and the other is weedy pasture ground. It's going to be corn next year. Here's what our current plan is. Just wondering what your thought is. We're planning on disking it this fall. We're wondering if spraying burn down this fall would be more beneficial, or if we should just wait until the spring and spray it out then.
I always tell people, get it done in the fall. And the reason why is then you've got winter kill coming along to help you out as well. You know, in terms of the disking, I get it. If it's an old stand, sometimes there are, let's call it rodent holes and maybe some ruts and things like that, and you're trying to level it out. So I can understand that, but, you know, the tillage isn't necessarily a requirement in terms of killing weeds. In terms of killing weeds and the old alfalfa, I just spray it out this fall. But a key is make sure you're doing it at least a couple weeks before your first frost. Once it starts freezing at night, then the plant starts to shut down. You won't get as much herbicide in. You won't get as good a kill. That's not what we want. If you're going to spend money, we want you to have that money spent be very, very worthwhile. But yeah, spray it out in the fall. Then winter kill will help finish a bunch of it out. And then you won't have so many stragglers come next spring. Oh, one other thing. We're in a dry period right now. So you said Nebraska, Darren. Nebraska is, and I don't know where he's at exactly.
Northeast Nebraska is all he said.
Yeah. So anyway, if you look at the current drought monitor map, it's drought. Okay. Here's my point. I don't remember who I was talking to yesterday about this same thing. And I just said, we got to be really careful with what we're doing. Because a lot of people talk about, oh, cover crops are the greatest thing ever. And they're a nice tool. But the problem is when you're in drought, cover crops don't work super well because they take moisture out of the ground. And if we're dry between now and next spring, all of a sudden you go plant your corn, it's 50 bushels less. I don't want that happening to you. So I would kill it out this fall, and then you've got a chance. It's not going to be sucking more moisture out of the ground. You got a great chance to catch some snow this winter. That's why a lot of people let it stand there. They don't till it in the fall, but I get it. If you want to disc it down, work it up, level it out, whatever, that's your call. But yeah, definitely kill it this fall.
All right, thanks for the question. Get this one from Sam, and he said, I'm holding on to these little beauties until harvest, or holding my breath till harvest. I think this is Sam from Kansas, but I'm not certain. He didn't mention where he's from. Yeah, he's got some nice looking corn ears that he sent a picture of, and yeah, I hope that turns out well for you too, Sam. We're kind of in the same boat. Harvest is getting awfully close here. We're cutting some silage now, so we're getting an early indication the yields are going to be off a little bit due to the drought, but still not too bad. I get this from Caleb in Georgia, and he said, hey guys, I don't mean to be an enabler to Brian's rants, but I felt compelled to share this.
Earlier
this year, I took a section of the outside row of a cornfield, and he took a picture of it here, said I weighed the ears, calculated the yield. Sure enough, it came out to 378 bushels per acre in the outside row. We manage the field for 250 bushel corn, and that area of the farm yields around 260. So yes, it is possible to get 400 bushel corn, 50% more on the outside row. Now,
of course it is.
I just have to figure out how to manage this unique zone the best I can.
Exactly. And that's what we were talking about with this. Not everybody's equipped to do that. But if you can just put more fertilizer out there, maybe a little more population, just manage it a little more intensely, just on the outside 2, 3, maybe 4 rows, you're going to get more yield because you don't have that competition that you do out in the field. So yes, edge rows should always yield not just a little more. I mean, we need to start thinking big time. I mean, like literally, that's why I threw out 400 bushels. If you're averaging 200 in your field, yes, it's absolutely true. Those outside rows could do 400 if you treat them accordingly.
All right. This question comes from Jim. He said, is there a benefit in using a surfactant when spraying group 3 insecticides or pyrethroids alone? Or do you not need a surfactant when you're putting those out?
The only time that I would think a surfactant could be helpful is if we had some bug that didn't move very well on the plant. Soybean aphids could possibly be that. I mean, we've never done that before. I mean, I think they move around enough. But when insects are mobile, coverage isn't that critical. So you can just think about that as a general statement. No, I'm trying to think of, and I've been recommending insecticide use on tens of millions of acres for 30 years now, and I'm just trying to think back if I've ever once had a recommendation of surfactant along with a just straight insecticide application. I don't think that I have. Not to say that it couldn't help in certain situations, though. So like I say, if it's a bug that moves around, definitely you're wasting your money. But if the bug doesn't move very much, then yeah, it actually could probably benefit you just a little bit. Oh, and as I say, I haven't recommended surfactant with it. I have for tank mixes, obviously. So if we're throwing, and this is most of the time insecticides getting sprayed, it's put with something else. And so a lot of times it does have surfactant with it because of the need for the herbicide surfactant.
Thanks for that question. Got this one from Chris in Minnesota. He said, can we use fall applied Valor ahead of Xtend soybeans?
Yep.
Also, should we cultivate it in or just spray it on top of the soil and leave it for spring?
And wait, stop. I'd probably just spray it this fall. Now, in the spring, I like it better worked in. But in the fall, you have obviously lots of time to get moisture, get it down in the ground, get it activated.
And he said, I don't want to lose too much of the effectiveness too early. What rate of Valor do you like in the fall?
4 ounces. There are a lot of people that'll run 3. I like 4. It's only going to cost you an extra couple of bucks. And for an extra couple of bucks, it absolutely will be worth it. And if you don't believe me, just do a couple of strips or half fields or whatever. Do 4 ounces versus 3 ounces. You will have more residual going into the spring and fewer weeds. The other key thing I would say is, okay, like on our farm, the guys just came to cut silage here in the last few days. So we've got some fields that are already open. Now, do I want to go out and spray fall Valor right now? Would that be a good idea now? No, because we're not going to get freeze up until first part of November. So, I mean, October, yes, then you got me. But right now, it's too early to expect it's going to last all the way into the spring. Now, you could still do it right now if you want to, and you can go out there with 4 ounces now. But I'm just saying you're not going to be super impressed with that weed control in the spring if you go this early, at least where we farm.
Thanks, Chris. I really appreciate the question. This comes from Kevin in New Jersey. He said, I've been reading Neil Kinsey's Hands-On Agronomy book, which is awesome, and I recommend everyone should read it. I've also been listening to you guys for about 7 years now on radio and watching your episodes online as well. You talk about calcium, magnesium, and potassium. Now, there's a pattern showing up in our fields that lay wet. They're somewhat to very high in magnesium. Some are low in calcium, and others are actually high in potassium, mostly in the range of 1% to 4%, though. What would be your best options to balance all of these without spending crazy money?
Well, let me first get this out. The magnesium-calcium thing, am I in favor of getting the magnesium down and the calcium up? Yes. But am I going to go right out and spend $200 an acre to do that? I mean, okay, if corn's $7 and I'm rich, then maybe I will, all right? But it's not one of these things where instantly I go, wow, I got a lot more yield and better stand and everything else. Now, your K, you said 1 to 4, that's low. That's all low. And that I'd spend money on first before I spend money on the calcium. But I would still spend at least a little bit of money in the calcium. And let's put it this way. Let's come up with a 20-year program. Okay, and I realize this, that's really long, but let's just look at, okay, what would it take to truly fix the soil? I mean, you can figure that out in 2 minutes. And then you say, all right, I'm going to take 1/20th of that, and I'm going to do it every year for the next 20 years. So I didn't spend a lot of money each year, but I'm working toward my goal. I'm still able to farm and make a profit, yet I know I'm headed toward the right direction. So fertilize with what you need to raise a great crop and just start working slowly on that calcium thing. Gypsum's the first thing that I probably think about. All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean and weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and its burned down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit valent.com/perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Dees supply representative today.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Eric sent us some feedback. You're just talking about gypsum here before the break, Brandon. He said, where do you find gypsum? Are there suppliers pretty much everywhere?
Yep. There are power plants that'll have gypsum. It's mined in certain areas. I know Iowa, very common. Yeah, just start asking around. Ask some fertilizer dealers or some farmers. You'll find some around most likely. But I didn't have a lot of time to finish that up on the last question right before the break. It was the low calcium thing. How do you raise your calcium? Well, there are lots of sources of calcium. And ultimately, I mean, you'll hear people talk about, oh, I love gypsum and it's great and you have to use gypsum. Well, it all depends on your cost. I mean, you could accomplish the same thing if you wanted to go out there with, let's say, lime and elemental sulfur. You could find, there are just a lot of other high calcium sources. So just ask around, try to figure out ultimately what's the cheapest option for you to truly fix your soil. And so you got to get a complete soil test first, figure out what's wrong, and then start working on all the things that are wrong and getting those addressed.
I get a question from Steve. He said, need to spray the yard for quack grass. What about the herbicide Certainty? Have you had good luck with that active ingredient, sulfosulfuron?
No. No. So that's basically Outrider or the old Maverick. Now, can it suppress quack grass a little bit? Sure. But keep in mind, quack grass is a perennial. It's tough. So generally speaking, in lawns, we tell people go with a very high rate of Roundup, kill the whole thing, and then go ahead and seed your lawn in again. But yeah, quack grass is a tough
crab
weed.
Crab grass. Annual weed, you bet.
Different,
it does a pretty nice job on crab grass, but like Brian mentioned, quack grass is a perennial. You'll see that root system with rhizomes. You also see the clasping auricles as that leaf latches onto the stem. And yeah, if you've got that, it's a tougher one. It takes Roundup to really kill it completely.
Yeah.
Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, Steve. Got one from GB. We were talking about multiple modes of action in fungicides, and GB said, how about pyraclostrobin or headline? Now, when we talk about multiple modes of action, headline just has one mode of action.
Right.
That's a strobilurin. And this is one of the reasons that we're talking about this, because a lot of guys liked headline so much, and it was getting used in so many different crops, that in some parts of the world, including parts of the United States, it's not very effective on certain diseases anymore.
Correct. We have a lot of resistance now. Just in our region here, we've got frog eye leaf spot now, which we never used to have. The strobes aren't working on that, like headline. And same thing with brown spot, same thing with a number of other diseases. So yes, we want you to use a number of different fungicides, but I would say this, we're looking for effective modes of action. So when we say we'd like to see you use two effective modes of action, don't tell me, oh, I'm going to use Pyraxor. Well, that's one effective mode of action on many of the diseases. Okay, and I'm not saying anything bad about Pyraxor. I really like that particular fungicide, but it does not have two effective modes of action in our region on either brown spot or frog eye leaf spot, because now those diseases are resistant to the headline component. So now all you have left is the SDHI component. That's why a lot of people are going to three mode of action products, and even look at BSF. Okay, they knew that. So what'd they do? They came with Revitec that's three modes of action. So all these people that were using Pyraxor loved it. They go, hey, wait a second here. I'm down to only one effective mode of action now. That's probably not wise. So now they've got Revitec. Now you can go three modes of action. And by the way, that's just an example. There are many products that are three modes of action, and you could also mix your own to get up to three, but the three modes of action in Revitec, there are only two effective modes of action on these diseases that are resistant to the strobes.
Thanks for the feedback there, GB. Got this one from Murray in Southwest Ontario, and he said, I've been listening to a lot of your radio programs through podcasts, and I recently heard Darren talking to Mike from Indiana about cover crops. Mike commented that he never uses glyphosate as his burn down because he's worried about potential negative effects on soil health, and instead he's using Gramoxone. In the past, I've heard comments similar to this about glyphosate, and I tend to use glyphosate as my burn down. So I'm wondering, do you think I should switch to something else?
Okay. I just am cringing at the thought of somebody who thinks glyphosate's so dangerous to the soil that they're going to use Gramoxone, and that's one of the most dangerous herbicides that's ever come out on the face of the earth. If you drink if you drink three, four ounces,
it's
you're
very
dead.
Dangerous product.
It's the now, same Mike, as,
Mike's
it's
a heck of a farmer, and I'm sure he's got great equipment because you definitely want to have a cab if you're going to be spraying forth. But yeah, it is kind of a dangerous product for humans.
Yes, I don't like it. I do not want to use Gramoxone on my farm. No way. So if you want to switch, go to Liberty. Okay, go to Liberty as a burn down. Now, I will tell you, we've done some studies with glyphosate, and we've put on ridiculous high rates that you're never going to use in 50 years, and we've seen no negative impact to the next crops in terms of, oh, there's less manganese getting in, or less of this, or it hurts the soil. We haven't found any of that. So, I mean, we've tested that. We haven't found that to be true at all with, I mean, ridiculously high rates. So I can't tell you exactly what we've done because it might have been off label, but I'll just say this, that I'm not worried about glyphosate at all. It's one of the safest products that's ever come out, ever. It's the most tested herbicide in the history of the world. So I'm not worried about that. But if you want to go away from it and you want to give the chemical companies twice or three times as much money, go to Liberty. That's your next best option.
All right. Thanks for the question, Murray. And thanks for checking out our show. We really appreciate that. I get this from TF, and TF thinks that we're spending too much money, that we're not going to make much money on our corn. He says, we've been corn on corn for 15 years. No special practices here. Heavy till every year, but we have rocks.
Oh, wait. That's the special practice right there. Heavy till. Keep in mind, when you go heavy tillage, you are lowering your soil's organic matter. You are releasing more nutrients. So that's going to make a difference. You're also going to bury rootworms to some degree, and diseases. So there is a special thing there. When you say no special thing, to me that is a special thing, because heavy tillage is, and you can do it as, I assume he's from the United States, correct?
Doesn't say.
Okay. Here, I don't know what all the rules are in Canada, okay? I don't farm in Canada, but I do in the United States. And in the United States, I can pretty much do what I want in my soil. So if I want to go do heavy tillage, I can. If I want to do no-till, I can for the most part. All right. But it's a free country here. But I'm just saying, to me, that is a special practice because I am depleting my soil of what it will potentially have or what it will have in the long term. And I'm cashing my check today instead of putting my check in the bank and trying to build the soil up and raise the organic matter over time. Please don't think that I'm saying what you're doing is bad. It's not. We do some heavy tillage on our farm too. I'm fine with it. But that's why it's working for you, and it doesn't work for a lot of other people. Because when you don't do heavy tillage, and I mean moldboard plow, you will have more rootworms, you will have more disease, and you will have more nitrogen tie-up. So that's why all the people, like us on a lot of our ground, quite frankly, when we're in reduced tillage or strip till or no-till, something like that, we have to spend more on nitrogen, we have to spend more on insecticide, and we have to probably, in most cases, take a harder look at disease and what varieties we're selecting and picking varieties more tolerant to disease.
Got two people who commented on, we were talking about field bindweed, and we called it Creeping Jenny,
yep,
growing up. One KK says, well, we've got something that looks similar called Wild Morning Glory. It's definitely not as... it's an invasive, but not as devastating as the bindweed is in our area. And Robert said, I disagree by my experience in the timing that you're spraying. Creeping Charlie. Sorry, he was looking at Creeping Charlie. He said, I don't agree with your Creeping Charlie timing. So, KK, thanks for the feedback on the Wild Morning Glory and the Creeping Jenny. And Robert said, disagrees in the timing for spraying Creeping Charlie. Well, Robert, I'll say this. I've dealt with a lot of Creeping Charlie over the years. You've got to spray it multiple times. There's nothing that's going to kill it 100% that's going to be safe for your lawn. That's why we're doing it in the spring early before we have a lot of flowers blooming and trees full of leaves, all those kinds of things. And then we're doing it late in the fall for the same reason. And oftentimes I'm sneaking in an application sometime in the early summer as well with a Safen 240. I really like Freelex for that, so I don't have as much volatility and drift issue. But yeah, I'd love to hear what your recommendation is, but you just said you disagree. Next time you disagree, Robert, tell us what would be better, because we'd like to learn as well. If you've got a way that works even better, we'd love to hear it. Thanks for all the questions we got today, and thanks for listening to our show. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.